What if we could live more in harmony with our animal friends and the whole of nature simply by stopping and listening more? Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators aims to bring animals and the world of nature front and center. We'll be chatting with professionals working in the animal industry and intuitive interspecies communicators about their work in the field. I'm your host, Tracy Pierce. I'm a professional animal communicator and lifelong animal lover and spiritual explorer. I've worked with animals professionally since 2002, and I've been studying animal communication and the human-animal connection since 2014. Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators is for animal lovers, nature lovers, intuitives, spiritual seekers, and those interested in interspecies communication. Our aim is to bring awareness to these professions and to expose the new and old science behind some of these seemingly out-of-the-world careers. We hope to educate and tickle your mind about what is possible by discussing this work and ways we can work with our animal friends, nature friends, and the planet as a whole, instead of them always being a secondary consideration. Join us now as we explore today's topic. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators. Our guest today is Dawn Frary, and our topic is end-of-life planning and the sacredness of death. Dawn is an Iowa City-based death doula and end-of-life planner. In 2018, she received certification as a death doula and home funeral guide, studying under Reverend Angie Buchanan of Earth Traditions Ministry. It is her sincere intention to guide families through difficult times with compassion, honesty, and love. Dawn is also a pet remembrance specialist and crematory operator. She strives to provide compassionate service to grieving families who have lost a friend and loving aftercare to deceased pets. In addition to working directly with families and veterinary offices, she also performs cremations and creates memorial documents for each pet. Dawn, welcome to the show here today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to our chat here today. Dawn, you do a lot of different work with animals. Could you tell us a bit about how you came to do this work that you're doing these days?
Just thinking back over my life, I have always been an animal person as opposed to more of a people person. My first friend in life was a cat, and I feel like that has just kind of carried forward and informed a lot of who I am and what I do. The specific work that I am doing now with animals is I do a lot of different things, but I do work part-time as a pet cremation or pet crematory operator. I also am a certified pet death doula. I'm a dual certified death doula, actually. Once for kind of general or more human oriented, but I also did a course 2-3 years ago to receive certification as an animal companion animal specific death doula. And I've always been attracted to kind of spooky stuff and, you know, kind of the darker things. And, you know, death kind of traditionally falls under this category, although I don't necessarily think of it that way. So what I do now is, you know, in addition to actual cremations, I provide support for families that are going through the loss of a pet or companion animal. Find ways to help them through that.
Cool. So you said a little bit about this, but you do the end of life planning for both humans and for animals. Do you feel like what do you feel like is the difference between those two, or how do they seem different to you?
So I've done a little bit of work with that with humans, but most of what I have done does fall with working with pets. But I think the overall principle, you know, there's general differences because, you know, a human's end of life is different from a pet's end of life in a lot of ways, and there's different options and different things to consider, of course. Ultimately, the two losses are quite different, and I do want to talk about that at some point, but I think overall my objectives are the same, whether I'm working with, you know, human end of life or pet end of life, but what I really want to do with people is figure out what their ideal end of life experience would be, or their ideal end of life experience for their pet, and basically how do we make that happen, or how do we come as close to making that happen as we can.
Yeah, having an ideal end of life is, well, it's quite the aspiration, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and I think it's not, you know, a lot of people just don't want to think about it for, you know, themselves or their loved ones or their pets, just because our culture is not one that really likes to talk about or acknowledge that death is a part of life. And so I think it's really important, whether it's, you know, whether we're talking about humans or animals, I think it's really important, and can really make those transitions a lot easier when they do come, if we can talk about this more and, you know, recognize like this is going to happen, so we might as well figure out what we can do to make that transition as pleasant as possible.
Yeah. And it does feel really important making those transitions as easy as we possibly can. Do you feel like there's anything else that makes end-of-life planning really important besides making the transition easier?
I was going to say talking about pets, but for humans too, I think, you know, figuring out if there is, you know, since we're talking about animals, I'll kind of go in that direction, but just, you know, figuring out maybe what experiences you would like to have with your pet, or that you would like your pet to have before they go, kind of figuring out just the logistics of things, you know, if this is something that you're comfortable taking your pet to the vet's office and doing this procedure, euthanasia, whether that's something that can occur in the home, whether or not, you know, if your pet is diagnosed with an illness, you know, depending, or, you know, figuring out how you want to proceed with their care from then on. You know, I know a lot of folks, myself included, have had pets diagnosed with illnesses that would have required, you know, a lot of treatment and a lot of really kind of invasive procedures. And I guess just kind of, you know, weighing things like that, where, you know, do I want to treat my pet's illness, which could end up putting a lot more stress on the pet, or do I want to let the pet proceed, you know, just kind of naturally, knowing that they are in a place where they feel safe and loved and comforted. So just really kind of feeling into these different facets that all are part of the end of life experience that I think just get either overlooked or not considered until, you know, kind of it's right upon us. And so I think just being prepared in whatever way, you know, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, you know, kind of tapping into all of those different parts of life and figuring out figuring out how you want that to be.
Yeah. And it, you know, I've also had pets diagnosed with illnesses where the vet was like, well, we could do this big procedure, or, you know, having to make mm-hmm. those hard decisions when we're kind of caught in the emotions of it. And I guess part of my view of the end of life planning is it's not just about the animal or the person that's getting ready to transition, but also those of us who are left behind and kind of making mm-hmm. those plans so it's easier on those who are left behind as well.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And one thing that I talk about with folks at my job at the crematory is, you know, losing a pet is so much different than losing a person. There's a lot of different emotions involved in that. And I don't know if you want me to talk about that now, or we can talk
about
that a little bit later. But I think I feel like, you know, there's a fair amount of folks that come in to have their pet cremated, most of which don't, you know, are just grateful for the service. They're like, I didn't realize this was a thing that we can do. And so just having that option, I think, is huge for people. But I feel like pet owners are often almost hesitant to really express, you know, grief and emotion because, again, our society, our culture doesn't want to look at death and views, you know, a pet's death, I think, as like less than a person's death, which, you know, I don't think that there is a hierarchy of death. I think it's all, you know, it all is what it is. But the example that I often use is, you know, my grandmother died in 2011 and we were very close. We were close, you know, my whole life. Her passing was sad and it was difficult, but I didn't see her every day. She wasn't part of my immediate everyday life and world, whereas our pets are. You know, I've been fortunate, I guess, that I have not lost that many people that are close to me, but I have lost a lot of pets. Being an animal person my entire life, you know, that's 40 plus years of pets that I have had, and that's a lot of pets that I've lost. And it's devastating in a way that is different than the loss of a person, because your pets are part of your day-to-day life. They're part of your rituals. For a lot of people, you know, their entire day is kind of like constructed around their pets. I know I can't get up in the morning and do anything until I feed my cats their wet food. So, you know, just all of these little things that that come along with the loss of a pet that don't necessarily, you know, align with the loss of a human. So I encourage people to feel what they need to feel. You know, that a lot of times people say, I'm sorry for crying or for expressing emotion. And I am always just like, no, please, like that's okay. And I don't know if they need to hear like it's okay to feel what you're feeling or what, but I feel like that's part of the death doula work, is just kind of like providing that space and in a way giving that permission for these people to grieve and mourn and be sad, where, you know, kind of out in the rest of the world, they, you know, they might not feel that they can express that with others.
Yeah, I can really, really relate to what you're saying. It makes me think of one of my cats in particular that, you know, when she passed away, I was just devastated because she was my best friend. Like I felt closer to her than I'd probably felt to any human at that point in my life, you know? And yeah, it was really, really challenging. And then I think of all the, you know, the other animals that have passed since then. And I really agree with you that sometimes people have even greater emotional response to losing a pet than to a person, even though that may seem wrong or weird or, you know, whatever our standards are around death here today. So yeah, I can relate to that.
Behind me on this shelf right here is my pets, my cats that I've lost. So they're all right there behind me.
Oh, well, beautiful. Great way to remember them. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about this earlier, but could you go maybe into a little bit more depth about what would be involved in this end of life planning process? Like if somebody were to work with you on this, what might they expect or what should they know?
I view my role in that process as being a support and being a guide. I feel like I'm there to let folks know what options are available to them. Let them know. I'm gonna back up just a little bit. Just thinking about like the role of a doula here. When the training that I did, our instructor kind of laid out the framework of being a doula as there being kind of a three-prong support system involved with being a doula, and that's providing physical, emotional, and mental support. So part of what that entails is, as I kind of said before, you know, more the logistics of things, you know, burial versus cremation, you know, what kind of, you know, treatment or even like palliative care you want to provide with your pet, but also like providing a space for pet owners to, you know, kind of safely explore and like come to terms with the fact that either their pet is going to pass or that it has passed. I've worked with folks kind of on both sides of the scenario where, you know, there's a, you know, the end of life is approaching, and just kind of like, you know, I had a client who, you know, she would shout if she was you know, questioning her or just, you know, kind of wanting to run what she was thinking and feeling by kind of impartial outside party. So having that support throughout, I think, is important to people. I've also worked with clients who had already lost a pet, but were struggling with, you know, some aspect of it, in whatever way. And so just, you know, kind of being, you know, I'm not a trained or certified counselor or anything like that, but part of what I do, I guess, could be considered kind of, you know, counseling folks through just, you know, feeling what they're feeling, figuring out kind of how to move on from the loss, and just things like that, that I think, you know, a lot of folks don't know how to do just simply because that's not something that we are taught or talk about or any of that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Basically, I just want to be like, you know, death happens. It doesn't have to be bad. It doesn't have to be scary. It is sad, but it's perfectly natural. It's, you know, just reassuring people that, like, you know, this doesn't have to be what our culture says it is, kind of thing.
Yeah, sometimes it can be way more of a celebration than a a massive feeling. I've definitely, I mean, I've talked with animals before and after they've passed as well. And sometimes we'll talk about those kind of things, like how, you know, do you want a funeral? Do you want some kind of celebration? And sometimes the animals, they'll just say the most interesting things about you know, what they want. So it's really cool to be able to approach it from that direction rather than the boohoo, everything's terrible. Point of view. So, yeah. So right now, at this moment in time, you're the only person I know who's an actual crematory operator. Could you tell us a little bit about the certification or training program that you went through to be able to do that kind of work?
Yeah, so I've been doing this job now for actually next month, it will be 4 years, which doesn't seem that long, but wow, here I am. Not ever a job that I aspired to or considered really before, you know, how I got the job was actually very, very synchronistic and was a pretty cool experience in that way. But, so I had done the death doula training in the summer of 2018, 5 years ago now, did that training, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with it, but I somehow it just kind of sort of snowballed into working with pets, just being an animal person. But my cat Henry died in April of 2019, and I took him to the place that I now work to be cremated. And I remember chatting with one of the people there, who is now one of my coworkers, and just talking about the job and, you know, ended up asking if they had any openings, if they were hiring, because I thought it just sounded like something I should be doing. I don't know if say that I wanted to do it was is accurate, but it was more something like, this is what I should be doing. So that was April of 2019. A few months later, I was still looking for, a part-time job. I'd left my full-time job of 14 years in a completely different field, like a year before all of this. So, you know, really just switching gears in that time of span of time between the two. Ended up, a friend of mine was at a local pet store, saw a flyer advertising what became my job. And it really worked out very synchronistically because, I was looking for a job. I didn't want to work anywhere else. I really wanted to work at the pet cremation place. And so when I saw that flyer, I'm just like, oh, well, there's my job. I started working there July of 2019. I think I'd been doing the work for a little while, and then through work, my employer it's an online course that you can do to be a certified crematory operator. It's through the International Cemetery Cremation and Funeral Association. And so it was, I think, a 1 or 2 day online, training course that wasn't just me, you know, it was people from all over the United States doing this course, most of which were funeral directors. A lot of crematory operators are also funeral directors. I am not, but did the online training or did the online certification course. And I am a certified crematory operator.
Wow. Yeah, I was really curious what the process was, because actually our last three cats that passed away, we had them cremated at the place where you work. So I had been inside there when one of the cats we had delivered her there ourselves. So at the moment it was just kind of like, wow, I wonder what you would have to do to work in a place like that. So thanks for explaining that. That's really interesting. It really feels to me, and this has come through in my own work too, that this death work is really sacred and meaningful in its own right. And it feels like you really bring that to the cremation process. Could you tell us a bit what your process is for cremating a companion animal?
Yeah. It's certainly not something that I take lightly. When I was first learning to do it, it felt weird. It was almost like I shouldn't be doing this kind of thing, because it, placing the animal in the machine and just doing all of this. Of course, that's much easier now to do. But the place that I work, we do, we receive a pet for every pet, unless the owner specifies otherwise. We do a fur clipping, we do paw prints. For dogs, we do nose prints. That's my favorite part of the process, is doing the paw prints and the nose prints, because I feel like that's my way to kind of, pay tribute to these pets. I didn't know them in life. I didn't get to hang out with them and play with them and know them the way that their owners did. But, I can do a really good paw print and I can do a really good fur clipping and, have that be my way of like honoring not just this animal, but the bond that it had with the owner as well. As far as the process itself, it's, knowing how to operate the machine and all of this kind of stuff, which is, boring kind of logistical stuff. But it's not lost on me ever that, like, I'm the last person to interact with this pet in its earthly form, I just think about that, it's almost like an alchemical process where, like, this pet is going from flesh and fur to, essentially ash and bone is what is left after the cremation. And just, it took a long time to kind of be able to wrap my head around that, just being the person to, take that pet, like I said, from its earthly body to this other form. And that's still something that, like, when I really sit and think about it, it's so profound. And, losing pets has been just the most devastating thing for me, that out of, like I said before, I've been fortunate and I've not lost a lot of humans in my life. But just, I don't know, it's almost like a dharma kind of thing. I feel like how I ended up with this job. Mm-hmm. This was something that was always so difficult for me. And now I see it. I see this, and I interact with death, whenever I work there a few times a week. And it's just really kind of, like, just the way that I think about death and the way that I just approach that with pets and things like that has changed a lot since I've been doing this work. And just really recognizing that just how natural it really all is. Like I said before, it's sad and we don't want it to happen, but it's going to. And just, it's really meaningful to me to be on the support side of things, doing what I do, just knowing and having been there myself and, being able to empathize with these people who are going through this loss.
Yeah, it really is such an important position, I guess you could say. I feel myself getting a little emotional even just thinking about some of my animals who have passed and the whole process too, as we're sitting here, which is a perfect segue to the next question, which is, death and dying can really bring up a lot of strong emotions in the clients we're working with. So how do you deal with that?
That's probably the most challenging aspect of it for me is dealing with the human emotion end of things. But again, that's kind of where I call up my doula powers, I guess. And I just try to remember that, what they need is someone to, in most cases, what folks need is for someone to hold space for them, to create that safe space for them to feel these emotions, to tell them what they're experiencing is valid, and just, you know, be that support, be that, you know, hold that space for them. There have been a very small number of folks who have lashed out, we'll say, in their grief, which is very difficult because it's very hard not to take that personally. I think when that does happen, you know, I try not to take it personally because it's certainly not about me. Again, it just comes back to the fact that we're so death averse in this culture that I think it's misplaced grief. It's not knowing how to process or express it in a way that is healthy. And so it comes out in inappropriate ways, sometimes directed at me or my coworkers. Just, you know, it's almost like a shoot the messenger kind of thing. Like they need to be upset with someone and it just happens to be you because you're there. Again, that fortunately is those are few and far between. Most people are just grateful to have the service, to be able to talk to someone about the loss of their pet. You know, so many people, and I love it when this happens, so many people will, you know, pull up pictures or videos on their phone and show me, you know, oh, here was my dog, you know, playing or whatever, which, you know, of course, by the time the pet comes to me, I don't ever get to see that. So, just, you know, being kind of a witness and like to these people's, not just their grief, but, you know, what they want to say about their pet, who's passed. And so almost, you know, being a collector of people's stories in that way, or, you know, just kind of holding on to that for people, for however long, and yeah, just kind of bearing witness and being a safe space for people.
Yeah, that's so important. I guess I find myself kind of doing some similar things in my work too. And I've only had, I think same as you, only a few people really lash out, but it definitely felt like it wasn't personal, that it was just, mm-hmm. they didn't know how to express. And so this is what came out, but it, I don't know. I've even found myself sometimes crying during sessions because like it's mm-hmm. so touching what people might share about their animal. Yeah. And, you know, it kind of reinforces, I feel like, to them how important the relationship was. And like you said, just being a witness to how important this animal was in their life can be such a gift to that person.
Yeah. I'm an empath, and so I, you know, can absorb things from other people. And so that's definitely a challenging part of the job. But I've also recognized that, you know, people need that, you know, I'm the authority in the situation. I'm the one there, I'm the professional, I'm the one that is kind of running the show in that way of providing the support and guiding them through. And I try my best to be that person, but there have also been a few times where I'm like, I'm crying right along with the family because just for whatever reason, you know, it's that difficult. And, you know, I cremated my own cat when he died a couple years ago. I cremated my sister's family's dog. I cremated my folks' dog. I've cremated friends' pets. And so, you know, in those times where it's more personal, you know, it's a lot more emotional, of course. But, you know, when I'm working with pet owners and, you know, folks like that at work, I do try my best to be professional and be strong. But yeah, there have been times where, you know, as soon as the family leaves, I just burst into tears because I'm like that. Just wow, whatever, you know, whether it was just tragic and sad or if it was something that just, you know, it was so beautiful either way, like, you know, it's, you get overcome and then you can't hold it in. So
Yeah. Well, and as you know, these kind of workers that we do work with death, yeah, it is important for us to let go of that mm-hmm. energy too. So
yeah, you can't carry it around with you for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any particular examples or stories that you're able to share with us about either end of life planning or the cremation process itself that have really stood out to you or really touched you?
I did. So all through my life, I've had like very intuitive experiences and I guess looking back, what would be called psychic experiences, but I was always hesitant to call them that. I have had a lot of those at this job, whether they are significant or insignificant. I discovered through this job that I am a psychopomp, which is kind of a bridge between this life and the next life, kind of a guide. I discovered this through the crematory work. It was something that I'd always been interested in and intrigued by, but I didn't know that it was kind of something that I am, and I am not. I'm not a psychopomp for every animal that I encounter, but there have been a few, a very small number, but enough to make me take note that animals that died a certain type of death, a very sudden or unexpected death, those are the ones that I have felt like need my guidance, I guess, to cross over. And I feel like I learned this kind of the hard way where I had a cat that some owners brought to the crematory. It was the end of the day. I think I, you know, maybe did not do the paw prints and the fur clipping like I normally would, because I think it was already after hours or something. And so that part of the process I left for the person that would be working the next day. And all through that evening after I left and after I came home, I felt that cat with me. Like she was scared and like she didn't know where she was. And I kind of felt awful for the whole evening that I didn't like do the whole process with her and just, you know, go ahead and complete the cremation and all of that stuff. I still remember her name. I still remember what she looked like. This was, you know, maybe 2 years ago at this point, maybe more. But she stayed with me. Her spirit stayed with me is the best way that I can describe it. And I just felt her all evening feeling afraid and uncertain and not knowing what was going on. And ever since then, I've really paid attention to that if I do feel it with another pet, and be sure that I am the one to complete that process and not leave it unfinished. Just for whatever reason, I'm not even sure how or why any of this works, but it's something that I have come to acknowledge is part of that work. So I don't fully understand it, but it's real. It's a thing.
So when their spirits come to you, then is it something where you feel like through the process that you're doing, it helps them cross over then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know what part of it that is, if it's just me being there with him, with them, you know, if somehow their, you know, consciousness or spirit or whatever it is, you know, recognizes that in me, I'm not sure. But yeah, it just feels like they hang around. It's almost like they're kind of clinging to my energy, just maybe not wanting to let go and not wanting to, you know, cross over that final, you know, bridge or however you want to look at it. Yeah.
That's interesting because it almost sounds like you are doing a bit of animal communication. Now, as far as I know, you don't work as an animal communicator, right?
No, I don't. I've had a few occurrences of that in my life, but it's not something that I know how to control or call on. I feel like when it has happened, it's been very spontaneous and, you know, not something that I was like trying to make happen. It just kind of happened. And there are few and far enough in between that it just, yeah, it's not really a thing for me, but I guess it kind of is in another way.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like there's a part of you that just knows how to be a psychopomp, and that part of you just kind of comes online when an animal that needs that help, like that part of you just comes online and does what it needs to do and helps the animal cross over from there.
That's a really good, I like that, comes online. That's a really good description, a way to describe it. Cause yeah, it's like I said, it's not something that, like, I've been aware of it for a long time, but it's not something that I've really learned yet how to control and harness, I guess. So
Yeah,
it's very intriguing.
Yeah, I'll be interested to talk with you in a few years and see what's changed about that. Yeah. It feels like something, yeah, just really coming forward. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So if you could give advice to someone whose companion animal is getting ready to transition, what kind of advice might you give them?
Oh, that's a good question. I think my ultimate advice would be just to, you know, as much as it might hurt and as much as we don't want to do this, just acknowledge that it's going to happen. I think it's so easy to stay in denial about that kind of thing until it's kind of right upon us. But just first and foremost, you know, doing whatever somebody can to just acknowledge and accept that this is what's going to happen. And then from there, you know, we can kind of break it down into smaller bits and make it more manageable, make it more, you know, easier to digest as just, you know, however long the process will be. But also, I think the other advice I would give to folks is to just, you know, you already love your pet, but just love it even harder. You know, at the end of life, I feel like we need to know that, you know, humans and animals, we need to know that we're still loved and appreciated, and just who doesn't want to go out that way?
Yeah, that's a really beautiful way of saying that. Well, thanks so much for joining me here today, Dawn. If our listeners wanted to learn more about you and your work, where would be the best place for them to go?
Probably my website, which is under construction at the moment, but you know, in the upcoming weeks, months, I'll get that back up. But it's just my name, dawnfrary.com. I'm also on the Instagrams. I have my personal account, Kitty Cat Bandit. And I also, so in addition to caring for deceased pets, I also care for live pets as a pet sitter. So I have a pet care feed that's Pet Care by Dawn on Instagram. So either one of those you'll find.
Awesome. Well, we'll be sure to include those links in the show notes so people just be able to click right on over there.
Awesome.
All right. Well, again, thanks so much, Dawn, for sharing your wisdom about the end of life planning and what it's like to be a crematory operator. I've really appreciated having you here today and sharing all your wisdom with us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I've been excited about this and really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in today. I hope you find yourself tickled and considering what else is possible when we decide to listen in different ways. Your animal and nature friends want to communicate with you. Are you ready to listen? If you found this podcast valuable and would like to support us, Please use the donation link in the show notes to make a donation. Thank you so much for your support. If you're an animal professional or interspecies communicator and would like to be a guest on the show, please send an email to hi, that's H-I, at tracy-pierce.com. Music is courtesy of Fesslian Studios. All links we mention will be provided in the show notes for this episode. If you found this show informative or helpful, please consider leaving us a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts.